This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Thanks again for joining us this week and listening to the podcast. We always appreciate you tuning in each week. There are always a lot of really cool things that we do. And one of them last week was that we offered a contest for a free hardback copy of a set of lecture notes that I say a set of lectures. It's really a book that is by David Girard. We are going to extend that contest for just a little bit longer. And so we're not going to announce a winner this week. And so those of you who may have missed entering the contest will get a little bit more of a chance. That's because I'm going to be doing a little bit of traveling here this week and won't have time really to go through all of what I need to do in order to draw the names and post everything and get this all ready. I'm recording this podcast a little bit early because I've got some traveling to do here this week and won't be back in time in order to get it up before Thursday morning in order for this to be fresh. Because this past weekend we had something that was fairly important and I thought that you guys might like to know because it is quite topical. This past weekend on Saturday, October the 14th of 2017, we just had a memorial service for the late John Mooring. John had died during the month of July. We were planning on having a memorial service for him then later in August, and unfortunately due to the Hurricane Harvey that came through Houston, we had to postpone that a little bit longer. So we just had that here this past weekend. And there were several people who were planning on coming into town whose travel plans were delayed, and they had rearranged their schedules in order to make it back. We had a very good turnout. There were probably about, I think, 60 or 70 people, many of whom were in and around Houston, of course, but we had a lot of people who came in from out of town. And one of the people who came in from far away was Alan Howard. Now, Alan was a friend of John Mooring's. And for those of you, by the way, when I mentioned John, he was the editor for a while for Magic Magazine and also for the MUM magazine for the Society of American Magicians. Aside from that, he was a performer. He is an author, had written several books, including The Texas Trickster, which is hard to find, one of his first books, that explained some of the things that he had done during his performance on The Ed Sullivan Show way back when, and also that he had published the book about Marshall Brodeen. It was an excellent book, as well as the one on Del Rey. And so we had the service, the memorial service, and the Broken Wand service this past weekend. And for those of you who couldn't attend, we did have that live streaming on my personal Facebook page for Scott Wells. And if you didn't see that, you can go back and view that because it's going to remain on my timeline. Or you can just go to the blog. What I've done is uploaded that over onto YouTube and then made a link on that. So if you go to the Magic Word Podcast, you can see that on the blog here, so that you can watch that 45-minute of the service that we held. And it was a particularly good and touching service. So if you missed that, want to go back and catch it, you can. But as I said, several people came in from out of town, and one of them was Alan Howard. So again, because that it is quite topical with Alan having just been signing the contract, apparently just within the past week, for being the new editor and replacing Mike Close, he's going to begin in January. So he's kind of got a very short time to get everything all up and running. And so I thought it was kind of interesting to talk with him about his credentials, what he had done leading up to this, and I thought that you might like to hear that as well. And we also, of course, hear his comments and his reflections on his good friend John Mooring, whom he worked with there at Stage Right Publishing, along with Stan Allen. And also, you might recall that Charlie Randall, who was the R in H&R Magic Books, was also at this memorial service. And so after we're finished talking with Alan, then we have a chance then to talk with Charlie to kind of get his reflections, also as a book publisher and someone who works in the in the journalism business, I guess, or printing business as well. I thought it'd be kind of interesting to hear his perspective on his reflections on John Mooring as well. So we hear that towards the end. And after that, we'll have three more product reviews of some things that are available from Murphy's Magic Supplies, but of course through your favorite magic dealer, which hopefully will be the Magic Word Podcast, because anything that you are looking for that you want to buy online, please take a look over at our magic store, and it's probably there. Yeah, certainly everything that we've reviewed is there, and if there's something that you don't see that you'd like to buy, let me know, and I'm sure that we can have that, because Murphy's Magic Supplies has thousands of items that are available. So, I want to introduce someone perhaps fairly new to you. He's not someone who is comfortable behind the microphone. It took a little bit of cajoling for me to twist his arm to actually get him to speak a little bit. You might hear a little few people in the background. We had a quiet corner where we were talking, so it's not obtrusive. It's not going to be bothersome, but I know that you'll enjoy the comments that Alan has to say about John Mooring, and then also just about what's happening with the future of MUM Magazine. So please welcome my guest here this week, Mr. Alan Howard, here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and I have with me right now Mr. Alan Howard. Hi there, Alan.
Hi there. How are you doing?
I'm fantastic, although this is sad times, but that brings us together over here. We're here right now then for John Mooring's memorial service. He died in July, and we had to postpone that because of Hurricane Harvey that was here in Houston. But I know there were several people who had planned to come into town earlier. Were you planning on coming in earlier
one? I was nearly in the car heading this way when I heard the news that I had better turn around and not make it.
And it's a good thing we did postpone that because, the hurricane came through and it was not a good time and a lot of people really did suffer. So when you came then this time, now you have a friend you said you're staying with while you're here? Or
I am. Friends in magic and juggling, and I happen to be staying with a juggler this weekend to come and talk about magic.
Bruce Manners, you were
That's
saying.
Right.
That's right.
Yes.
Bruce is a great juggler. We don't have enough jugglers, I don't think. You know, I remember talking with Pat Hazel many years ago. I lived in Omaha, and he was telling me that he admires jugglers more than magicians, although he is a magician as well and a comedy writer, worked for Seinfeld and everything too. But he was saying the reason is that, you know, where a magician can literally, you know, buy a trick today and put it in the show tonight, magician or jugglers practice.
Yeah, there's a big difference.
Yeah, you just can't pick up three clubs and say, hey, I'm going to go do a show tonight, you know.
And also, as Frank Olivier pointed out at one point, it's amazing that magicians can put all that practice in and hide their skills when jugglers put the same amount of practice in and they show off what they can do.
Well, that's a different way of looking at it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you were the editor for Juggle Magazine for a number of years.
That's right.
And is the magazine still viable, or did that close?
Juggle Magazine went away about 5 years, five or 6 years ago.
That's what I was thinking. Okay. And so how many years was that?
That was there 13 years total.
Okay.
And I was brought in by Stan Allen to work on that, and then gradually worked up to being editor, and then Stan decided to be doing something else, and I became editor and publisher for the last 5 years.
Well, was he editing the magazine, or who had it before? He bought them. I mean, Sage Wright Publishing purchased that.
The International Jugglers Association had a magazine, and they were looking to do something different, and they asked Stan for advice, and then they eventually asked Stan, well, would you do it for us?
Yeah.
So he became the publisher for the organization.
Gotcha. Okay. And now the International Jugglers Association has been around probably about as long as the IBM and SAM.
Since 1947.
47. Well, let me think about that. So it wasn't quite as long, because the IBM, I think, predates that sometime.
The juggling organization actually started from a meeting at an IBM convention.
Oh, really? Okay. Who were the guys? Who were some of the founders? I mean, I know some of the guys at the IBM, but...
Probably not names you would know in magic so much anymore. Art Jennings, Roger Montandon.
Roger
are the two
Montandon.
Main guy.
I know that name.
Yeah, he just passed away earlier this year also at the age of 99.
Okay, wow, yes. And so you were the editor of that for a long number of years, and it seemed to have the same quality and feel of Magic Magazine. It was staple bound. It wasn't perfect bound, as I recall.
It was only 48 pages, so we had a staple, but all glossy paper, color on lots of them. And we tried to keep the quality up, so thanks for saying that.
Well, no, I thought it was very good quality because you probably didn't have nearly the circulation that Magic Magazine. At its peak, I think Stan said what? Magic had like 10,000?
Had over 10,000 at one point.
Okay, and Juggle had how many, you think?
The association had over 3,000 members at one point.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, no magazine or organization has been staying as they were, so everything's dropped off.
Boy, isn't that the truth. You know, that's the same thing about all magazines. You know, now, was that the house organ? I mean, like the MUM and the Linking Ring? So that was, if you remember.
It was very similar to MUM or Linking Ring. If you remember.
You got that with your membership. That was one of your benefits.
Correct.
You know, basically. Now, who were the writers? Actually, I contributed an article way back when to the magazine. But did you have some regular contributors, like Magic Magazine and others?
Sure, we had a lot of regulars, and we certainly accept submissions from a lot of other people.
Yeah.
You know, people like Jerry Martin and Vivica Gardner, each of them wrote a lot of stuff for us. And
right.
Numerous other people that I'm sure I will think of as soon as this recorder's turned off.
Since we stopped recording. Well, as far as that, I always find that fascinating. I mean, that for juggling, I think, you know, how can you teach somebody to juggle through words, unlike you can teach a card trick, you know, if you do double lift or these kinds of things. I mean, there are 19 elemental effects, you know, basically with magic, you know, with, you know, transposition, production vanishes, et cetera. I would think there's, with juggling, it's just don't drop it.
Yeah, that's the number one rule.
But yeah.
Yeah, it's tough teaching anything in a print medium, something visual like that, especially juggling. Todd Strong did a teach-in column for years. And
really?
Teaching
what did he
tricks.
Teach?
Balls, clubs, rings, boxes, all sorts of stuff. And he made good use of illustrations, lots of arrows to show the ball in your hand here, moves over to here.
Yeah.
And we think it was effective.
Yeah.
But I wish I knew who said this quote. It's been attributed to Martin Mull, but I don't know who actually said it. Writing about music is like dancing about architecture. And writing about juggling is basically the same thing. You just can't put it into words what you're going to be seeing tossed through the air.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure that's true. But did you ever have video clips also? But now this is probably, you didn't go digital, I don't think, before the magazine closed.
The magazine was replaced by what they call the eJuggle magazine on the Jugglers Association website,
mm-hmm.
and now they have video and audio and things that we could not have because we were strictly print.
Right. And so, since it's an eJuggle then right now, who's editing that, or is it someone who's a webmaster, or how's that work?
Yeah, this webmaster is actually based out of Israel. A guy named Scott Seltzer is taking the project on,
mm-hmm.
and there are several people writing for it and creating content.
Okay, and then it's easier, I would think. Then obviously you can post videos and everybody puts links to their YouTube videos and whatnot as well.
So. There is a lot of that, sure.
Yeah, yeah. Now, did you consider yourself really more of a juggler than a magician from way back when? Or
I started out as a magician, did magic as a kid. I've got this typical story everybody else does.
Yeah.
And then in high school, I learned how to juggle, and that sort of took over and pushed the magic aside for a while.
You weren't a Long Beach mystic, were you?
I was not. I grew up in Ohio.
So okay,
a
long way
Ohio
from there.
Story. Yeah, suburb of Long Beach.
Yeah.
But yeah, magic went secondary for quite a few years and made a career as a juggler and never lost the interest in magic, and then somehow ended up working with Stan Allen just through the Juggle magazine. He brought me in for that and said, well, I'm going to employ you here, but you also have to work on the Magic magazine as well. I said, great, that's perfect.
Yeah.
I never thought I'd use my English degree, so suddenly I'm getting to do all kinds of things at once.
Well, yeah, writing and juggling and doing some magic as well. So when you were working then as a juggler, did you book yourself before as a magician, and did you find it more difficult to try to market yourself as a juggler?
No, when I was doing magic shows, it was mostly when I was much younger and doing kid shows myself.
Yeah.
And I didn't really do what I would think of as professional magic. And when I really started performing professionally, it was all juggling. Occasionally I'd do some magic tricks, but I had a few things I would think took away from the juggling. Like I would do a couple tricks in the act, obviously magic tricks, you know, there's a secret involved, and I do something like a devil stick in the juggling section, and people would think there's a trick involved there too.
Okay.
So I thought the magic was sort of lessening the impact of the juggling.
Interesting.
And I dropped the magic from the shows at that
altogether,
point.
And just did juggling only.
Right.
That's fascinating.
And I'll just do magic that I don't show anybody, just for hobby.
just
not
for
on
friends.
Stage.
Yeah. Correct. Now, when you are doing juggling, do you have like a 45-minute show that you did, or longer, or what?
Sure. What do you need? Make me an offer.
Because there are different kinds of juggling, obviously, with balls and pins and, like I say, yo-yos even. Yeah. Did you ever do yo-yos?
Very little bit with yo-yos.
Did you? You kind of fiddle around with it, though, I guess.
Oh, of course, yeah. It's all related somehow.
Yeah,
Professionally, I did a variety of stuff. I did a few things with Circus Act, just straight 8 minutes of juggling and music and occasionally wearing rhinestones and you know, not talking. And then I worked a lot of comedy clubs where I did a much longer show and a lot of talking. I did a lot of my work in comedy clubs and on cruise ships.
Like David Diebel kind of a thing?
Kind of, but he's funnier.
Well, he is hilarious. I love him.
He's great.
Yeah.
But yeah, we did some more sort of things, comedy clubs, cruise ships, and production shows like Las Vegas, Reno, Atlantic City, you know, on stage and in between all the big dance numbers.
Yeah. They say we. There was it a group or troupe that you worked with?
No, just me. I was saying me and David Diebel's done the similar kind of thing.
I see. Gotcha. And did you work a lot of cruise ships?
I did. I can't remember the number. My wife knows because she had to look it up for something, like 350 cruises or something.
Wow, over a period of
56 different ships over about 20 years.
Goodness sakes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's why when you finally decide, okay, I'm done with ships and I'm going to stay on shore and going to start this editing thing.
It was not a conscious decision, but that's the way it worked out. I'm still waiting for the land to seem like it's stopping moving.
Boy, after 20 years.
To that.
Yeah. Well, so what was your plan? I mean, you know, that it sounds like...
Plan? What do you think I had a plan?
Life happens and you kind of go with the flow.
I went to college partly because I could use the gym to juggle in every day.
Okay.
And thought, well, we'll just see what happens with this. And somehow I kept getting shows.
In Ohio?
More shows in Ohio and then branching out beyond that. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, I'll just keep doing this till I find something I like better.
Yeah.
And occasionally interesting things come up, but I can't say I've found anything that I really like better than juggling and now magazines. And it's
right.
not actually been a plan. It just sort of, I've been lucky enough it falls toward me.
Right, right. Now, how'd you meet Stan or start working then with him? Did you submit something? Or
When the Jugglers Association asked him to do the magazine, they mentioned a few people who might be good to be consulting with that, so I was a consultant on that magazine from the first issue, and then I mentioned a couple things, and I came in and mentioned a couple things, and
yeah.
I ended up sending him an article and a couple more articles, and eventually he brought me in to do more and more, and
right.
And just snowballed, basically.
And you became a contributing editor, as I recall, then, isn't that right?
I did. I became associate editor for Juggle, and then editor for Juggle, and then various terms were used for contributing editor and associate editor for Magic Magazine.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Were you involved with any of the layout or just the contributing of articles?
I looked at the layouts.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly most of the people in the office had a hand in looking mm-hmm. at it and saying, you might do this, you might think about that.
Yeah.
Stan was certainly more in charge than anyone else on that because this is magazine.
Oh, of course.
He was good at letting anyone else have a voice in what they would have. Yeah, if they had an opinion or if you think something might work better, certainly listen to us.
Just like with Magic Live, you know, he's the one who's, it's his brain baby, I guess, he puts together,
right.
but he has a good, talented staff. I know with Rory and some others, were you involved with some of the planning on the
Certainly not as much as Rory, but mm-hmm. yeah, I've been in on a lot of the planning and been a sounding board for a few things.
Yeah. And I'm sure that he had different ideas or whatever. And so what is it like in a meeting, you know, whenever that you're having a planning meeting for that kind of that large of a convention? I mean, 1,600 magicians. I mean, you know, it's a huge undertaking. I mean, do you talk about logistics or you talk about ideas or you talk about, you know, talent or?
Yes, all the above.
Scheduling and?
I was largely out of the Magic Live planning because, as Stan said, he needed someone working on the magazine while he's off focusing on the convention.
Gotcha.
I was mostly putting out magazines and getting stuff on paper.
Right.
So I was not in on a lot of the really mm-hmm. tough meetings for Magic Live.
Right, right.
So I would hear about it later rather than be sitting in on it.
But then you were kind of helping during, you know, kind of pointing people, I guess, logistically during the conventions.
Yeah,
I've seen you around.
There were a couple of the conventions that I actually saw, but others I've just been backstage more and running
backstage.
Around.
Backstage? Yeah, yeah.
Which is also great. I can't complain about that. It's amazing either way.
When you were working with Juggle Magazine and you're so still with juggling, you know, I've got some favorite jugglers that I've seen, and I'm sure that you have some that will come to mind, but may not be as well known to particularly the magician mainstream. But I mean, like Charlie Fry is one of my favorite guys.
He's
great.
He's the best.
He is the best.
Yeah.
You know, I think. And there was a guy we saw at Magic Live a while back. It was a hat guy. Threw him up. It like boomerang.
Paul Ponce.
What's his name?
Paul Ponce.
Ponce. That guy was off the hook. Crazy.
He's phenomenal.
He was.
And the nicest guy in the world.
Is he?
Okay. It's hard to believe that you could meet someone nicer. It's just not possible. He is great.
Another guy. Was it Ivan Amade? Or no. There was another guy. Seems like a very muscular guy, you know, and he was juggling. I think he was also at a magical. Anyhow, my question is like, who are some of the magicians or jugglers, I should say, you know, that kind of come to mind that are your favorites?
Favorite was always Bobby May. A guy named Bobby May started out in vaudeville and had a career up to the 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, in that area. And I had to a jugglers convention in Eugene, Oregon, and I found out there's this guy named Bobby May who lives in Cleveland, Ohio.
Wow.
So I had to cross back across the country again and find out how to meet him. So I was lucky to know him for the last couple of years of his life. And he was great. People have called him the best American juggler that there's been.
Now, is he the guy who kind of did the slapstick and stuff? Because I remember that Charlie was showing some black and white movie of someone that he has... He had honored that he thought was just tremendous. He was an older guy also. It may not be Bobby May.
That could be. Charlie was certainly influenced by George Carl. He was a good
friend
of George
Carl. Yes, George Carl. That was the name. Yeah.
Another great act. Not known so much as a juggler, but a terrific act.
Yeah, he was more of a body or comedy, when I try to say. Did pratfalls and things.
Yeah, he was a physical comedian.
Physical comedian, that's what I'm trying to say. Yeah, more of that. But yeah, I can see that Charlie puts a lot of that into his type of act. So who else? I mean, who would be a contemporary?
Well, when I was starting out, Chris Cremo was a great performer and great juggler, and he's still performing.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, there's just so many.
Yeah.
I hate to single out any because there's so many that
I hate to put you on the spot. Exactly.
But when I was first starting out, the people like Bobby May and Chris Cremo, who was on television at the time,
mm-hmm.
and then Francis Brunn, of course, Anthony Gatto, and those are the real standouts. But there's a lot of really good ones.
Yeah, you know, whenever that I think about magicians, they said, you know, there's like, you know, the A-class magicians, and then the drop between A and B is pretty dramatic, you know, as far as those
and
who are
B
like...
And from B to C is even
it's painful. Even more so, exactly.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. I would assume juggling would be something of the same?
Probably.
Okay, so there's certain people at a certain level, and below that, they're good, but they're not as well known or whatever.
But, right. Well, again, back to Bobby May, I mentioned that people had told him, or had told us, that he was the greatest American juggler and what he thought about that. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, it's nice to say so, but I was just an act, just a working act.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a great thing to aspire to, and a lot of people are just that. They're a good working act. There's nothing wrong with them. They may not be the top of the line,
right,
but they're doing a fine job and happy with it, and that's what I aspire to.
Right. That's all anybody could do, I guess, you know, from that standpoint. You know, again, we're here because of just a memorial and tribute and celebration of life, you know, for John Mooring, and so many people are here as family and friends such as you have come. And that, how long had you known John, or did you just meet him when he was at the magazine?
I met him when I moved to Las Vegas to start Rookie Magic magazine. So mm-hmm.
Had you heard about him?
September of 99. I knew the name just from reading Magic magazine.
Sure.
And didn't really know much about his personal history until mm-hmm. later on. I hope he'd gradually let be known over the course of time.
Yeah, what are some memories you have of him, or what you may have learned from him, or what tribute could you say?
Boy, we were just talking right after the tribute here that he was the guy you always wanted to sit next to at lunch, because he wouldn't be ostentatious, he wouldn't be shouting things out across the room, mm-hmm. but he would always be the funniest guy there. So if something's happening, he'd be commenting on it, yeah. and you want to be right next to him to hear it.
And he was always kind of low-key, too. He wasn't very loud, you know, he
right.
kind of had to... And also, I felt like when you were talking with him, he was focused on you. He wasn't kind of looking to see who else he could talk to in the room. You
right,
know?
Yeah, not like I'm doing now, because I see a big room behind you, so sorry about that.
No. So it's just that it seems like that his attention was focused, you know, and that gets what made him genuinely nice. And that one of the comments that Mark Holstein had said during the service over here was how that Mike Caveney had said the quote that the best thing you say about him is that I've never heard anybody say a negative thing about him.
That's
know?
True. And yeah, he was that kind of guy.
Yeah.
And I think that focus is right. He made you feel like you were the center of everything he was doing at right at that point.
Yeah.
And that was success for him, because everything he did, he would focus on it and make sure he had it right and work out the details.
Right.
Not in friendships, of course. He would sure. make sure that you did the same sort of thing. He would inspire you to do the same and focus and think about it. And he would just give you gentle nudges saying, maybe think about doing this or look at doing that. And he would sort of point you in a direction that ultimately turned out to be the right way to go.
Well, it was one of the things, again, Mark Holstein was talking about, where that people had said that they would submit articles to him and he would have nice ways of never harsh criticism, but basically, you know, layer it and saying, you know, this is really good, and usually give you compliments, but then, you know, give you some criticism or critique that would certainly raise it from being good to really being wonderful.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Although there were a few times he could be a little harsher, just not to the person that...
to make his point, I guess?
Yeah, well, in editing magazines, he would say, well, I got this in, and this is just not what it should be.
Mm-hmm.
But he would be much more diplomatic when talking to the person who had written it.
Yeah.
But he was funnier talking to us.
Gotcha, I understand.
Never mean, but it was
sure.
It was funnier.
Things he would like to say to that person.
Yeah, but was smart enough not to.
Not to, exactly. So I know that you're going to be, you've just been awarded the, or awarded, you've been tapped out and nominated. You are now going to be the new editor for the MUM, Magic, Unity, and Might. Did you know that?
I've heard that too, yeah.
Which is another reason that I wanted just to chat with you. I know there's not a lot that you know or can talk about, you know, at this point, but it seems like that it has been just continuing to grow. You know, whenever John had taken over the magazine from David Goodsell, I remember this story because, David had talked with me way back when and said, you know, are you interested, you know, in being an editor? And I thought about it, and I said, I don't think so. Later, I put in my name, you know, for the Linking Ring magazine, and I competed for that, and they decided on Sammy Patrick Smith, which is great. I'm so glad he does a great job with it. Boy, am I glad I missed a bullet there, because I know how difficult that would have been.
Not filling me with hope right here.
Well, there's so many other things I wanted to do. You know, it's kind of like, well, mm-hmm. This is really guns or butter. You're either doing a magazine or you can do a lot of other things, because there's so much time, as you've seen Stan, you know, and also, as you yeah. know, from Juggle Magazine, you know.
Yeah, and I was talking with Mike Close, who's retiring from that position.
Yeah.
Talking with him the other day, and he said, you know, this means you're not going to have any vacations. So, yeah, I know what that means.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Yeah, it's a... huge undertaking.
And there are deadlines and editing of people, you know, as you know, that they're sending things all the way in. Because when I was contributing an editor for the convention column for Magic Magazine, I remember people, you know, this was well before, you know, emails or anything, and people would send me faxes and they would send me floppy disks, you know, of what yeah. they had typed in there, and their grammar was horrible, or their editing, you know, there wasn't any spell check or whatever, particularly Terry Seabrook. He was the worst. And so I'd have to spend a lot of time to try to add the whole thing together. But I was going to say, I remember John telling me a story that when David Dr. Goodsell had given him the magazines. He kind of met him someplace, said, okay, we'll meet at a, I don't know, Jack in a Box or someplace, and they kind of drove, and he said, okay, well, here's the stuff. He said, out in the car. I said, what do you mean? So he's got these boxes, and here, you know, he just loaded them out of his trunk and gave them to John, said, you know, these are the, you know, the dockets, you know, that I've been working on and what you can do, and good luck.
Yeah, that's pretty much all you need.
Yeah, yeah, there's not much, I mean, you're kind of familiar with what it was, so you knew kind of what you're getting into, or do you think you do?
I think I do, because I've had this experience with other magazines, other organizations.
Sure.
And I'm sure this will be different, and I'm completely wrong.
So what is, what's Mike, I mean, now Mike, I know, has been very busy with Penn & Teller Fool Us, and that's probably been taking more and more of his time. As I was about to say, sorry, that David did a great job with the magazine. I think that John brought it up to a different level, and Mike, you know, had another thing. And so do you have an idea or a concept? I mean, like, again, whenever I had interviewed for The Linking Ring, I had an idea of changing the format completely from the smaller format to the large and doing some other things, and I had it all laid out. Did you... When you were, I guess, competing for this job, did you have to submit some kind of ideas? And
yeah, I had to submit some suggestions, and they wanted to see what directions it might take things and some possibilities.
And they may or may not, who knows?
That's true. Yeah. And we'll see what actually works out.
Yeah. So you're thinking that you might be able to maybe ease in some of these ideas? But, of course, I guess it's up really to the board to say we approve these, or how does that work?
I'm sort of thinking I've got free reign to do what I want, which is a frightening thing. But, yeah, they're certainly going to be overseeing it and making comments and corrections if they need to. But, yeah, we have a few things we're hoping to do, and we'll see how that happens.
Is there anything that you can talk about that, as far as it might be a dramatic change?
Nothing yet. And when John Mooring took over the magazine, he had 6-month lead time to do this. And the overlap with Dave Goodsell was 6 months. And then when Mike Close took it over, he only had 4 months after John retiring. Then Mike took it over. And I now have 2 months. So it means I'm behind already before I'm even starting.
Yeah, here we are in October. You're going to start then for January?
My first issue will be January, correct, which has to be at the printer about 2 months from now.
Okay. So 2 months from now?
2 months from now, middle of December.
Okay, so they can print them that quickly. You know, because usually I think the magazines are like 2 months behind. Like when I'm reading The Linking Ring sometimes, seems like that, you know, they're printing an obituary just now of Tom Mullica or something.
Yeah,
you know?
It usually takes about a week to actually print, but you have to have all that stuff ready to print.
Sure.
And you have to figure out the spacing and the paging. Someone happens to die on the deadline time, you don't necessarily have room to get him in right away and do it justice.
You have to
you can't pull something else out to make it fit.
Right.
So there's questions like that. So there are a few things we might be doing, might be changing. I would like it to happen right away, and other things might just be gradually happening just because I'm behind the times already.
Are there some contributors or some people whose articles that you're going to continue to run, or that you've got some ideas?
There are certainly people there I would like to have continue, and there are some new people that I like to have join the team.
Okay.
And I can't tell you who they are yet.
Okay, I was about to ask, but I thought you probably can't tip your hand over there, but you've got some people. So if somebody wants to contribute articles, how can they get in touch with you?
Please get in touch with me. If you have any contributions, any ideas, any directions you'd like to see the magazine take, I'm open to all comers. So let me know. And you can reach me an email at Alan Howard, that's AlanHoward, at MagicSam.com.
MagicSam.com, got it. And so this also means, of course, you're going to be getting into politics, you know, because you're going to have to go to the board. That's the difference with Juggle Magazine versus the MUM, because, you know, there you have the Society of American Magicians.
The International Juggler Association certainly had plenty of politics and conflicts internally as well.
So it doesn't matter what organization it is, you're all going to have something.
Some boring stories involving that, too. It can be contentious at times with any organization.
Yeah, I'm sure that it can, particularly if you're going to be having some changes or something that you kind of want to apparently rock the boat or have something that is different from what they've...
Well, sure, yeah. There's a segment of people that want change, and there's a segment of people who don't want change, and you've got to try to be everything to everybody.
Right.
It doesn't
seem
like it's going to happen, but that's our hope.
Now, how many pages is the MUM currently?
72.
72. So it is staple bound as well. Is it possible that could go larger and be perfect bound? Or
it could. That would be exchanging we would be adding a lot of pages. There's no reason to make it perfect bound without adding pages, and that means adding more money, which is more cost to print, more cost for paper, and heavier to mail. So I'm not sure the organization is wanting to go for the extra expenses for all that.
Right.
But we'll see.
And it comes down really to the bottom line, again, of profit margin, that is, of advertisers. And it seems like with magazines in general, I mean, I don't care if it's Time Magazine or whatever, it's getting smaller and smaller, even the sizes are getting smaller.
It is tough to get advertising these days because everybody's got the internet. And I know one person who I probably shouldn't name, but has stopped advertising in magazines unless he's given something for free.
The cost of
because he figures he sends out an email and gets as enough of a response from that as he needs. So if you send out an email, it's free, and you get all your product sold, why advertise?
Right. Right. Well,
we're trying to change that. I would like to make it a good thing to advertise in print again.
Well, what would be a good, what would be a pitch to you, to dealers who would, who you think should be advertising? What would you tell them that you can offer that magazine can do that the internet can't?
That's a good question. I've got to figure that out. If you have any ideas, let me know.
Okay, same email address.
Yes, please.
Well, and that kind of goes again to the root of the question as far as magazines in general. I've, you know, heard it, I mean, when I've attended the IBM board meetings where they're talking about the growing expenses, particularly of postage and everything else, but the membership costs still remaining the same, that right. They just can't offset the printing costs. And, you know, if you're going to raise, when you got declining membership anyhow, at the current price, if you raise the price of membership, you're going to have even less people, and then it's kind of a death spiral, seems right. like, for magazines.
That's true. That's not a pleasant phrase for it, but well. Yeah, it's basically what it is. Yeah, you don't want to be losing money. We're not out to make money on
this. Of course,
but
yeah.
You can't afford to keep losing money year after year, so there's
right.
got to be something there.
So that's why I think it's just the opposite of that, in which that actually, instead of having a magazine grow more pages to get to a perfect bound, that you would actually maybe be scaling it back and maybe even have a more of a pamphlet size like the Linking Ring is, or fewer pages or whatever, in order to reduce the overhead.
Yeah, if we send our MEM postcard every month, that should be all the reading you need to do.
That's all, yeah. That's right. Go to our website.
Everything's on the website these days, yeah.
Yeah, because the IBM and the SAM both have their magazines, their journals, I should say, posted, so you can look at a PDF if you're
sure.
a member. You have to be a member that you right. just can't go back and look at that. So
and
that's
if you're a member,
thing.
You can save a few dollars. If you don't want the printed magazine, you can just
right.
apply for the digital version only.
Now, in doing that, are you, when you're editing it, are those two separate things? You're editing the digital magazine as well in order to allow for that kind of digital content like videos and hot links and all that kind of
that
stuff?
That may change. We certainly would like to have more links and more videos and more accessible information that way.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, we're editing for print because that's what most people see, and that's basically what shows up on the website at the moment is a PDF version of the print magazine.
Right.
We can have a lot of extra bells and whistles on the web, and at some point we would like to have some more content that's not necessarily doable in print, but that's future plans.
Well, I remember St. Alan talking about that very thing whenever that there was a difference between Magic Magazine and Genie Magazine. You know, one was a PDF and the other one that his was more interactive, and he said it cost a lot more money, it took a lot more time, mm-hmm. but he felt like he had a better product that was more interactive. You know, do you see, and I see the MUM being very much like Genie also from the standpoint of being, and the Linking Ring too, being kind of a static PDF. There's no change in that immediately, I assume.
Nothing I can speak of at the moment.
Okay, fair enough. But there might be something, because it's just, I would think that it's tough enough to edit a paper magazine, but then also to take the time to put all the links. Or are we going to have somebody who's an associate editor to handle that?
Well, Bruce Calver already does that. He puts
okay.
the PDFs up on the
gotcha.
SAM website, and he adds videos and links to other things.
So he's
already on top of that kind of
so
thing.
So he's going to continue in his position?
I believe so, yes.
Okay.
I talked to him yesterday, and he seems amenable to that.
Good, good. You haven't had anybody who has said, hey, look, you know, now's a good time for me to kind of end. Is there going to be a column that will end in December?
I'm sure there will be, but I haven't had time to talk to everybody yet.
Okay.
Was not allowed to talk about this job until the contract was signed, and
now
that just
it is.
Happened 12 days ago,
mm-hmm.
and so now I can start talking to people.
That's
although
pretty
I
fresh,
took a week to go to the Genie convention, so I talked to people in person. I just was falling off on emails and phone
sure.
calls,
sure.
and now I did my 9-hour drive here to Houston for this, and I get to drive
you drove
back
down?
Tomorrow. I drove in from Florida, yes.
Wow. Okay.
So I made a few phone calls on the drive,
mm-hmm.
but really next Monday I'll get back and sit behind my desk and really focus on this without other things coming up like
good.
This.
Completely different subject. You mentioned Genie Magazine or the Genie Convention. I didn't attend. I haven't been to one yet. I've been wanting to go, but time constraints have kept me from going. How was it this year?
It was great. It was a
have
lot
been to
of magic.
Past ones or
I've
by
been,
comparison?
I went to the second one and now the third one. I missed the first,
okay.
which most people tell me the first was the best one.
Mm-hmm.
But this was really good. A lot of talent, a lot of great shows. And just a lot of magic.
Yeah. How many people? I mean, again, with Magic Life having 1,600 people, how many do you think were there?
I'm not sure. I never heard an official count.
Okay.
People were guessing around 500 people.
Mm-hmm.
But it could be way off. It could
yeah.
have been more.
But the hurricane didn't bother, because I remember Irma, or I think, was coming through, or just had gone through.
Yeah, this is mostly stuff was cleaned up after the hurricane,
mm-hmm.
so we didn't really see any signs of it.
So hopefully that it was, yeah, nothing that... that had delayed the convention, or the hotel was fine, there wasn't any damage or anything like that, or
yeah.
as far as getting out, you flew into the, well,
nope.
you live in Florida.
Yeah,
so.
I drove in, where I live is that Destin, Florida area, so
oh,
I'm about
Destin.
Halfway between Houston
yeah.
and Orlando, a little closer to Orlando.
Beautiful white beaches.
Yeah.
Yeah,
very nice.
For vacationers, I would highly recommend Destin as a destination, you know, I mean, in other words, if you're going to be traveling east, that don't, you know, stop whenever that you're getting into Florida thinking the beaches are great, continue to go to Destin, they got the beautiful white snow white powder beaches.
Say it's the one place in this country that does have the white beaches.
Yes,
that's unusual. And
on the Gulf,
if you're a beach person, it is really nice.
Yeah, that is very nice. Well, listen, I thank you very much. I appreciate your time. And again, sorry that we had to kind of have a conversation, during such a somber occasion. But thank you for being part of it and driving all the way over to be here. Then for this, the name of my podcast is called the Magic Word Podcast. My question to you is: what is your phrase? What is it that's important to you? What's your philosophy of life?
My silence is deafening here. I'm not sure I have a philosophy of life. I'm not done with my life yet. I'm still working.
Well, you said you're like a juggler, you're kind of bouncing around from one thing to another. So, live life to the fullest, or something.
I think a good word is enthusiasm. Coming in from talking about John Mooring today, he was always enthusiastic about anything, and he inspired that in other people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a good way to go through life. Be enthusiastic about what you're doing, and if you don't like it, find something you are enthusiastic about. If you're lucky enough to be able to do that, that's a great thing. So that's what I'm shooting for.
Then you're a lucky person. Then
so far, I'm happy.
Well, good luck. Also, then with the MUM as being editor, I think that'll be great. I think you'll do a great job.
Well, thank you. I'll try to live up to that too.
Okay. Thank you very much. And so for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Alan Howard, and this is Scotty out.
And Alan out.
All right, while we are still at the memorial service for John Mooring, that I thought it'd be interesting to speak with Charlie Randall, who is the R in H&R Magic and Books, and you've heard me, he and I speak frequently in the past. Hey there, Charlie.
Hey, Scott, how's it going?
Fine. Sorry that we have to come here today for this, but I thought it'd be kind of interesting to get your perspective because John had done so much, and he's done a lot of editing, of course, in magazines and things here in the past, and that you too, of course, are still editing and still publishing books, even though you're not... You've already sold the H&R.
So the retail part. Yes.
But you're still doing some work. Can you talk a little about John and kind of what your thoughts were and when you'd met him?
Well, first of all, he's a great friend, and I'd known him for many years. He was here from Texas, and always had that Texas connection. And then he's a great book guy, editor, and John loved all kinds of books. It was funny over the years, he'd call me up and say, "Hey, Charlie, what's the latest card book?" Even little self-working with stuff. He just loved card tricks and all, so he'd buy a lot of history, so he bought lots of books. And over the years, his library went in and out. He sold them all off, and then he'd get new ones, and he'd sell those all off. So he had many books over the years. I think the main thing from a book point of view, a writing point of view, was he was a very good writer and editor. The Magic Magazine and then Mum Magazine, he did a great job with those. And over the years, he talked me into, and he really had to twist my arm doing a few articles on John Rockerbomber and Gary Plants and Trixie Vaughn and some others and all. And I'm not a writer. I can do a little bit of editing. I'm pretty good at publishing. Richard Hatch is a writer, not me. So I'd write these articles, and I wouldn't be very happy to him. I'd send them to John, and he'd edit them, and I'd get them back. And I'm like, man, these are great articles. They got my name on them.
He put the polish on it.
Yeah, but he could really. Yeah, he's a good polish. He's a great editor. And he's going to be missed. He's a good guy. Always enjoyed my time with him. And, I wish he'd have had more time here in Houston in the last 4 or 5 years. And we'd get together every now and then. And
it was difficult with the Parkinson's that he had, certainly,
because
he was in a position it was hard for him to talk,
In the last couple of years, he couldn't get around much and everything at all. Before that, he'd come down for lunch every now and then. I mean, living on the opposite side of town, so that was a little difficult. But, we'd get together. I mean, Gary Plants was much better at it than I ever was about getting together with him and all. And he's always going over to help John out and everything. We're going to miss John. Just a great guy.
What do you think? You said he bought some books, sold some books, and everything. What have you talked with Jeannie, his sister, to kind of see what's going to be happening?
He still has some stuff left, and people like Gary have gotten a few things and some other stuff she's got. But I think most of it is gone now. I mean, they've taken care of it. I think there's some poster stuff that may be left, not a whole lot. And then he's got memorabilia, he's got pictures. John took a lot of pictures. We were just looking at pictures over here in this memorial book. And I even found a picture that I took in there of John and Richard Hatch and David Price. We'd gone to the Egyptian Hall Museum one time.
In Nashville.
We were up there, and John and I, Richard, and a few other people went, and then all these other people left, and the three of us had stayed behind, and David told us to stay behind, and we did, and when they all left, there's this whole back room that, only I guess if he liked you, and I'm sure it's because of Richard Hatch, that he took us back there and showed us all this great stuff and everything. And, just what a great place and everything.
That was something.
It was something.
That was the collection that Mike Cavey
has, and George Daly bought.
George Daly,
and Mike's pretty much taken it over, the Egyptian hall name in his house and Mike's collection. Oh my God, it's just.
I've not been to Mike's house. I did go to David Price's. He showed me the whole, you know, museum there as well. But so what's Mike's place like?
Mike is unbelievable. First of all, the house is just fantastic. It's this older house in Pasadena, right. California. And
well, he was
just beautiful.
He was into real estate, I think, buying and selling a lot of real estate.
Something like that.
He got in at the good time.
He did well, I think. And the house, just absolutely beautiful. Nice place. And then it's just so well done, woodwork and everything. You used to have this great tree house in the backyard, but they had to take it down at one point because the tree wasn't doing well. And just beautiful house. And then he's got all the great magic. And then, you know, like, I think it's upstairs there with most of the Egyptian hall stuff. He's got a basement, too, of stuff and everything. And he's got all these posters and just... It's overwhelming. You start going through the stuff, you know, and after 4 or 5 hours, you realize, man, I haven't even gone through a tenth of this thing yet or whatever.
Well, it's kind of like Ken Klossman's place, you know, when you go through that. Which reminds me, just a second, you were talking about his house and some of the things that I remember Jerry Andrus had in his backyard that, what was that called, you know, the box that you stand in?
Impossible Boxing.
Impossible Box or something, and then you take it from an angle. And I remember there was something in, I thought, Genie Magazine or something.
Omni Magazine.
It was an Omni, but they said, we're going to show you how it's done next month so you can construct your own. Never had that second follow-up, did they?
I don't know that they did. You know, that's another one I talked to Richard Hatch about. He went to Jerry Andrus's place once, and he's got a picture of him standing in that box.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, so that's a good story there. But back on John, man, I'm sure going to miss him. And
74 is pretty young, you know.
Especially as we get older,
sure,
exactly.
That's right. And that's a sad thing that there were more and more people. Of course, we just had Ray Goulet, who had just passed. Did you ever
I went to Ray's place a couple times.
Another
great call. Man, another fantastic one.
So, to finish on a high note, at least that, you know, we have a lot of good friends and people who have come in from out of town. It's great to see some folks that haven't seen Dexter Cleveland in I don't know how many years. We used to room together at Vector's, you know, years ago. Of course, Alan Howard and the rest of John's family, his son Charles had come all the way from Las Vegas, and several other people who had come, but like Walter Blaney, Scott Hollingsworth over here.
Greg Curtis from Austin.
Greg Curtis.
John's, good people.
So a lot of people who had come down. So it's really nice to see a lot of people, you know, from around here then as well. So anyhow, thank you for your,
Anytime.
Your comments over there.
Always happy to have Scott.
So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Charlie Randall. This is Scotty out.
Well, that was pretty interesting to kind of hear a perspective of what the plans are for the upcoming magazine for MUM. As we started to get into it, there's really a longer discussion, perhaps one that needs to be had with some other publishers of Magic magazines, and that is kind of what the future of the printing business will be, particularly as it relates to Magic magazines. Because I believe, as Alan had agreed, that there are fewer people or companies that are advertising within the print magazines and more who are doing things online for a variety of reasons, most importantly that it's cheaper for them to do the advertising online and hopefully try to reach as many or more people than what the circulation is for the magazines. So that's kind of an ongoing problem, I think, and also it's even exacerbated by the problems with membership and getting people to join and to stay members of organizations regardless. I'm not just talking about the International Brotherhood of Magicians and the Society of American Magicians, but other organizations as well, whether it's the JCs or Lions Club or the Rotary Club or Elks or whatever it is. I just think that there is probably a little bit of a problem over there, which could warrant a discussion that would be a little bit deeper on that. So I thank you, Alan, very much for what you had information you had given us, and I wish him nothing but the best of luck in taking the MUM journal for the Society of American Magicians on into the next generation, and that it will be great. I know those who have done it in the past, the ones I know, like David Goodsell, and then made even better when John had picked it up, and then with Mike Close, each time seems like it goes into something a little bit better every time. And I'm sure that Alan's going to do something wonderful with it also. And thanks also for your comments and your reflections on John Mooring, and also thanks to Charlie Randall for your reflections as well. And so, again, for those of you who didn't attend the service but are interested in going back and watching and listening to some of the things that went on and seeing some of the people who were there, be sure to go to our blog at themagicwordpodcast.com, and you can click on the video to watch that. Now it's time for a few product reviews from Murphy's Magic Supplies. First up, we're going to talk about Money Morphosis. This is a trick that is by Dallas, I don't know if I'm going to pronounce his name correctly or not, but Fueston. His name is Dallas Fueston and Jason Bird. So these gentlemen have got a great idea. It's a nice variation on the self-folding bill. Basically, the idea is that you show a bill. You can borrow it, switch it, of course, but you've got a bill. You put it, you fold it lengthwise, put it on the back of your forearm, and it appears to be like a caterpillar, which is crawling up to the tips of your fingers. You then put the bill in your hand that's flat open, and then slowly it starts to form from a, quote, caterpillar, or the long bill, into a butterfly. And then you can leave it on your hand, and then it appears that the wings start to beat a little bit as if it is breathing, and you can pick it up, put it on the tip of your fingertip, and it will continue to move and beat. There are some bonus ideas if you want to try to make it fly or move from one hand to the other. So there are some neat things that that you can do with that, but I tend to agree with the person who was presenting this on the online video, and that is that at that point, you know, that people are starting to think, wait a minute, there's something attached here. But the nice thing is, of course, you can always, you know, break the thread, and you're handing it out to somebody. Now, what you're receiving with this is not only the online video that explains how to do this and the handling of it and everything, then too, and how to fold the bill and everything, but you get basically 20 yards. Let's see, what is that? Yeah. You're going to be getting 200 yards of this special invisible thread. Now, this is, when I say invisible thread, this is a little bit stronger than your typical invisible thread that, let's say, Yagel Masika might sell. This is something that will not break easily. I say easily. If you pull on it hard enough, certainly it will. So this way, whenever you dislodge it, you can hand that out. So essentially, what you are buying with this Money Morphosis for only $20 is 200 yards of that should last you for a very long time. And of course, you don't need to break it and hand it out every time. I've always liked the self-folding bill and then doing the switch and over to a coin, to a silver dollar or something, and then you can do away with the the bill that was just self-folding, and now the attention is on the coin, and the bill is gone out of sight. But this takes it to a different level from the standpoint that it's something that becomes real, and I kind of like the way that that the wings kind of breathe almost. So anyhow, it's a nice little walk around thing, something a little bit different. It's not a card trick. It is close up. It is easy enough. That's skill level is for a beginner. Anybody can do it fairly easily. There are a few moves that might take a little bit of work in order to become adept at it, but it is a pretty darn cool little thing. Looks great on video. One of the nice things about this too is you do get the television rights. So this is something, as I said, looks fantastic on television. You can imagine on video, or if you're going to be doing something on YouTube that you want to post, that looks really good too. Now, one thing I thought was kind of interesting and somewhat odd, that in the online instructions, they were showing how to fold the bill, which, by the way, there is an online PDF of a template that you can download that you can work with also. But anyhow, as you're as they were explaining and folding the bill, it was folded one way with the head, Washington's, let's say the dollar bill, which was Washington's head facing one direction. However, whenever they were talking about how to attach the thread in order to make this work, that the bill had been folded the opposite direction. And there wasn't any explanation because they were explaining here's where you put the needle and the thread, etc. So they showed how to fold one way, but then showed you something else. So when you're, after you buy this and you're following the directions, you might consider flipping the bill over before and then folding it the same way but facing a different direction. That way it makes more sense whenever they explain then a little bit later, because otherwise you're going to have to unfold it and refold it. Or you can do it the same way. It's not that big of a deal, but it was just a little anomaly, I thought, in the production of, and it's also important, I think, as to the explanation when they explain where you're going to be putting a needle on around George's head, etc., without getting into too much detail. Anyhow, pretty cool little trick, and it's something that I would recommend. It's something different for the walk-around performer. Again, it's called Money Morphosis, and I recommend it. All right, well, the last product review was another one of those DIY projects where you have to do it yourself and put things together and thread the needle and do all the rest of stuff to make the thing. And similar to last week when we had a product review or two of some things that were also DIY. And I like kind of fiddling around and doing these things. But these next couple of items are things that come ready to perform right out of the packet. All it takes is personality, presentation, and a little bit of guts to go ahead and do this in front of an audience, because they are minimalist tricks. And they're both tricks that are by my friend Paul Brook. And Paul is a very creative mentalist over in the UK, and I have been a fan of his for many, many years. Going back, he had sent me his Brook test, which are some excellent ideas and some wonderful thinking about how to do book tests. And anyhow, I'm getting off the subject, other than just saying Paul Brook has had a creative and inventive mind in mentalism and magic for a long number of years. And I've got a couple of products here that I want to talk about. And it's interesting because these products that I'm going to be talking about come with the things that you need. And then you also go to an online video in order to get the instructions to learn how they're done. What's interesting in one video, Paul is bald and clean shaven. In the other video, he is still bald, but he has a full beard. So one thing obviously came before the other. So I'm going to go with the one which I think was probably the earlier one, which is going to be called Cool Beans. And this is a neat little trick. Basically, you know how when you go to a coffee shop or bakery or someplace, they give you a little loyalty card, or I should say a card which they would stamp. And after you get so many stamps, then you're going to be getting a free product, in this case, like a free cup of coffee or something like that. Okay, well, Cool Beans is that very thing in which that you are provided with five different cards, and they have stamps that are already on them. Now, part of the cool thing about this is that they have not been printed with stamps. They have actually, Paul has gone through individually and stamped all of these so that way that they look exactly like what they're supposed to be. Some are a little bit smudged, and you know, yours will be different than what mine looks like. Anyhow, that's beside the point. But there are so many cool things that you can do with these cards. So if you wanted to again, carry these with you, that's what I like about this particular trick, Cool Beans, that it is organic, something that you can have in your wallet, and it makes sense as you pull them out. Now, there are, as I said, so many stamps that are on there, and each of them are names of fictitious coffee shops. I mean, there's no Starbucks or anything like that, but there are other kinds of coffee places. And so you could say when you're traveling or different places that you've been, you've gone there often enough, you got a few stamps but haven't collected enough for a free drink yet. But I've got a few here. And there are different things that you can do in which that you, the person would select a card, you know, and your back is turned, you ask a couple of questions, and you have then another card, which is actually a bookstore card that has a coupon for like 20% off. Anyhow, there are some codes on the back of this. This is your crib sheet for all the things that you can do with these cards. So there are many ideas, a branching anagram, things to do with the colors, with the logos, different things like that. And you can even, as a person would select a card, when you turn around and glance at the back of the card, you can tell from the backs of the cards which one that they had selected. Or you can leave your back turned the whole time. And through a series of yes or no questions, you can divine which one that they're holding, or that you can know how many how many stamps that people have. So if they take two or three cards or one or whatever, there's some really cool things you can do with this. The point is that I think it's very organic, something that you would use. You wouldn't necessarily do all these tricks that are on here, but I would say there are probably about five or six different ideas with this. So you could just do one and then later do something else. Or they say, that's kind of cool. They say, well, can you do something else? So, well, yeah, why you got the card? Why don't you do this or that? So there's some other kind of cool things you can do with it. And that's why it's called Cool Beans. And that's why I think it is pretty cool and recommended, again, by Paul Brook. Next up is another cool trick. It's not Cool Beans, but it has to do with something that is a mentalism trick by Paul. It's called loyalty. Now, these, again, are things that you would normally use and are not out of the ordinary. Just as with the Cool Beans that you would be carrying around these cards that would be stamped, here, these are loyalty things where that they'd be scanned. These are things that would be attached to your keychain. So there again is something that you would be carrying with you, let's say, all the time. So in this case, you would have three of these things. Now, they're probably about 1 inch by 2 inches long, you know, that kind of thing. It's got a hole in it so you can attach it to your keychain. And just like with Cool Beans, where those were fictitious coffee shops, here you have three fictitious businesses. And these are not things that you can make up yourself. I mean, you definitely need to buy that. And it's fairly inexpensive. I think that it is something that you guys would definitely be interested in purchasing, you know, particularly since it's for a low price of only $30. There again, like with Cool Beans, there are several things that you can do with it. So as you hand someone your car keys that have these loyalty tags attached to them, you can have them think of the name of one of these places or their little logos. You can do a like a, not a drawing duplication, but a drawing, you know, basically of one of the things that is a logo that's on there, and then you would be correct of whatever it is that they had selected. And on the back under the UPC, there are some fantastic things you can do that has to do with the numbers that essentially make up into a magic square. He's got some really good tips on some magic squares and how to obfuscate this. And boy, just that alone, I think, is you know, worth the price over there for this. And let me say that as well as with Cool Beans, for loyalty, there is also a PDF that has all the instructions written down, plus a few other bonus ideas and some things that are certainly worth reading. And Paul is very thoughtful as far as putting together this whole routine and the tricks themselves. And so I think it's certainly worth it. And whether you get Cool Beans or loyalty, they can be done in conjunction with each other a little bit. There are some things that, I mean, one doesn't relate to the other one. They're really not related, but the fact that, again, they're so organic and something that you would naturally carry with you, it makes a lot of sense. So with that, I would say that I would recommend it, and that is Paul Brooks' Loyalty. All of these products are available from Murphy's Magic Supplies, which you can purchase from your favorite magic dealer, which, of course, hopefully will be the Magic Word Podcast. So be sure and to go to our magic store by clicking on that link, and you can go over and purchase any of the things, again, that we have reviewed here on the podcast. And if there's something that's not there, let me know, and I can put that on there so that way you'll have a link in order to purchase that if you're interested. So thank you very much for Murphy's Magic Supplies for making these things available so I can share my ideas with you. Well, that pretty much wraps up, I think, what we had to talk about here for this week. And I also want to remind you again to go to last week's blog, and you can enter the contest then for a copy of the hardback book from David Girard. Out of My Hat is the title of the book. And good luck to that. I hope that you are going to be the winner. And so be sure to enter that contest. Also, by going to the blog here this week at themagicwordpodcast.com, not only can you watch a video of the service that we had for John Mooring, but also thanks goes to Gary Plants for putting together a presentation that was made some years ago at another event. And this was a slideshow presentation that was of John's life, and very well done. And so there is a video link to that as well. So you'll enjoy just a few minutes of watching some pictures rotate from John's life then as well. So again, I want to thank my guest, Mr. Alan Howard, and to old Charlie Randall as well for speaking on this week's episode of the Magic Word Podcast. And if all goes right, as we get ready for Halloween, I thought that it might be interesting to speak with someone who is a mind reader or a mentalist. Rather than talking about someone who is doing seances, we've done that for the past couple of years, I thought I would talk with someone and post a podcast that I had recorded with a well-known mentalist, and I know you're going to enjoy, Mr. Larry Becker. So be sure to stay tuned next week and hear what Larry has to say. I know that you will be interested. I was pretty amazed by some of the things that he candidly shared with me, and I hope you guys will enjoy it as well. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember to be enthusiastic about what you're doing. And if you're not enthusiastic about it, then find something else. This is Scotty out.